Thad Jones on trumpet, Hank Mobley on tenor sax, Abdullah Ibrahim on piano, Don Moore on bass, and brother of Thad, Elvin, on drums. This is a wonderful tune, I like it, called Midnight Walk, and it was the title track of Elvin's 1966 album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I can tell you I'm very happy following that drama of the young football team members and their coach who got trapped in a cave, and then water came in and just filled the cave up, and it looked like they were not going to make it back out. But all of them have made it out safely. And I know that people have been watching that. I certainly have been. And I'm really, really happy that they survived. Although one diver who went in early on to bring the team members out, he did die. He ran out of oxygen. And I'm sure that when people get their senses together, they will try to decide what actually happened, and they will recall that diver with great respect. Well, on this side of the ocean, with his nomination yesterday of Brett Kavanaugh, an appellate judge, an appellate court judge for the U.S. Court of Appeals District of Columbia Circuit, to succeed Justice Anthony Kennedy on the U.S. Supreme Court. President Donald J. Trump has revved up his campaign to swing the court to the right. If confirmed, Kavanaugh will join Justice Neil Gorsuch on the court. They both were law clerks for Kennedy, Anthony Kennedy, who resigned. They were both law clerks for him in their early legal careers. The Democrats have vowed to fight and block Kavanaugh's confirmation, but it is not certain that they can muster up the required number of votes to get that done. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is in his element as showman, using the brewing Supreme Court battle as a main event to draw people's attention, while he dims the lights on other battles that haven't gone so well. But, you know, the people shouldn't be fooled. And we also shouldn't regard this Supreme Court drama as our fight. This is not our fight. Our fight actually is in the lower courts, and we shouldn't get all obsessed and upset about what is happening at the U.S. Supreme Court level. I know it sounds kind of odd to say that. I'm not saying that the U.S. Supreme Court is irrelevant. By no means am I saying that. I'm saying that for any number of reasons, we have to look at the U.S. Supreme Court very differently, because the assumption is that the U.S. Supreme Court has the same value, the same purpose, the same importance for all Americans, and it doesn't. This is my view. I don't see that the U.S. Supreme Court should factor in my life the same way it factors in a white person's life in this country, because we have two different experiences with the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court, as regards people of color, is an oppressive agent and one that seeks to maintain order and actually fairness for white America. Two entirely different dispositions. So I don't get very, very emotional about the U.S. Supreme Court. The historical references there, we talk about these cases all the time, Plessy versus Ferguson, Dred Scott. We have all these cases that the U.S. Supreme Court did not help bring justice to. They paid lip service, and in order for the U.S. Supreme Court to do what it allegedly is mandated to do, people had to get killed, had to have unending protests in the streets, you had to embarrass the government into doing what it's supposed to do automatically. So I am not one of those people in awe of the U.S. Supreme Court. I've known through the historical record cases where the U.S. Supreme Court basically was an agent of oppression and saw that as its chief role in regulating the society, this apartheid society, to maintain apartheid society. It can't argue that. So I'm not that emotional about the U.S. Supreme Court and who gets appointed. I appreciate the fact that as an institution, the U.S. Supreme Court could serve a good purpose. It has, from time to time, according to the historical record. It did render some decisions, but only after a major fight in the streets. The U.S. Supreme Court is not and was not inclined to do its job because they were jurists interested only in the purity of the law, and therefore the law had to be fair to everyone. That was not the mindset at all in the U.S. Supreme Court for a very, very long time, and some would say even now. The U.S. Supreme Court, in fact, had many rulings that undergirded racial apartheid in the United States, that gave sanction to inequality, that allowed a society to be lopsided when it comes to the matter of the law and the application of the law. So you will pardon me if I'm not all that enthusiastic about the U.S. Supreme Court. I think there's more than enough evidence to suggest that the U.S. Supreme Court over time did serve a very awful purpose, and that was to operate in concert with the government, if you will, to maintain strict racial segregation and unequal access to resources. So I don't get excited about who is going to be appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court. What we need to accept is that the court is not likely to radically alter its vision, its actions, its thinking. Yes, from time to time, they open up a little sluice here and they let some things flow through. But as an institution, there are two entirely different views of the U.S. Supreme Court, and I think that my view is as legitimate as anybody else's, because the historical record suggests that the U.S. Supreme Court has been more often than not a tool of politics. It should not be. It should not be the case that the U.S. Supreme Court is being interfered with by any president or any political entity. It should not be the case that any justice on the Supreme Court should be so uncomfortably close to moneyed interests, and then still think that such a justice could actually deliver justice. I don't think you could make that argument. But I would say the real fight is not in the Supreme Court, in any case. The fight, when it comes to the vast majority of people, and specifically people of color in the United States, the real fight is in the lower courts. That's where the slaughter is conducted. People, ordinary people, are just eaten up and spit out. They're chewed up in the lower courts. We know that mathematically the U.S. Supreme Court is not going to handle a high volume of cases in any typical term. The U.S. Supreme Court would handle about 60, 70 cases. They would agree, by the way. There's no automatic demand that they obey. They discuss it among themselves, and they agree to hear certain cases, to review certain cases, because they feel that the law, as it applies in these particular cases, would have far-reaching effect, or the cases themselves raise questions that would have practically universal application. So they agree among themselves. So we listen to this case and we listen to that case. They cherry pick the cases that they will hear. And we should keep in mind that the few cases that the U.S. Supreme Court would hear or review in any term, is they're minuscule compared to the number of cases tried in U.S. courts generally on any given day of any given year. The action is in the lower courts. And we always have to remember that. That's where heads get lopped off. That's where it's wholesale attack and assault on people's so-called constitutional rights. That's where you have massive instances of judicial misconduct and prosecutorial misconduct and police misconduct. That's where people's rights are ripped away and ripped apart and just ripped up. That's what's happening in the lower courts, and it is not an exceptional experience. It is the norm. And particularly for people of color in this country, it is in the lower courts that you get totally brutalized and you have no recourse, no recourse at all. So I've been saying for years, if our legislators had any sense, they would just leave this U.S. Supreme Court carnival, leave it alone. You know, you fight with the president if you want, go ahead, but understand that that's not where the action is. the action isn't in naming a justice to the U.S. Supreme Court. It's in naming fair-minded judges at all these lower court levels where people get brutalized every single day. And you have little recourse. Because even if you're successful at appealing your case up the ladder through the court system, and you're lucky enough to catch the attention of the U.S. Supreme Court, there is no guarantee that the court would actually look at your case dispassionately or would even select to hear your case. I'll give you an example. You know I'm telling you the truth. You think for yourself how many times you've been in and out of criminal court. Well, let me take a really popular one, housing court. You never win in housing court. It is not designed for the petitioner to win. Housing court is a tool and a mechanism for the real estate sector. They must prevail. You must lose. That's decided before you even walk into court. Traffic court. You're guilty. Before anything is said, you are guilty, pay on the way out, but you're guilty. Criminal court, you think of any court system within a state, and it is the last thing you would expect from such a system is fairness and justice. It ain't gonna happen. It's just not going to happen. I'll give you an example about what happened in Detroit on Friday, just this past Friday. A court in Detroit came up with a very interesting ruling. The lawsuit was filed against the city and the state. And the lawsuit in behalf of the children in the Detroit school system. And it said, the case that they made was that the Detroit school system, as it is mandated to operate, and the conditions under which it's supposed to operate with few schools that are actually in good shape without the adequate funding for teachers and so forth. They cited all of this and they said that all of these conditions, which are abhorrent, and parenthetically, we've discussed this in Detroit and any other major city, that is a majority Black and Latino student population. Okay. So the advocates for the children filed a lawsuit challenging the city's technically the Board of Education for the city, and even the state. They targeted the governor of the state, saying that the systems that controlled money and that controlled the apparatus that would normally fund well the a city's educational system were just beyond repair. It was so bad. And they wanted an improvement. just to fix the schools alone. They're in such bad shape. Their lawsuits alleged that it would take at least $500 million to get the schools in reasonable shape so that children could come in and actually sit down in a classroom and start learning. Now, what do you think was the ruling by the court? The ruling wasn't that, well, you have a point here and we'll try and fix the schools, or you have a point and we'll try and get the teachers paid. No, 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 no. The judge in the case ruled that the children have no, I'm quoting now from a 40-page opinion, they have no fundamental right to learn to read and write. Let me repeat that to you. I know you're thinking, that can't be true. Well, yes, it is true. The advocates for the children are saying that the conditions are so poor, and the lawsuit that they filed was meant to hold accountable the officials who were presiding over such a broken system that the children could not read or write. In fact, according to the statistics they cited, they said that just barely half, less than half actually, like 44% or 45% of the children were proficient in reading and math and so forth. All of the things that the children are tested on. And their request of the court was to remedy the situation by ordering the state to do its job. Provide the resources that would fix up these dilapidated buildings, which also might be unsafe. Pay teachers a decent wage. And let's get this system, this broken system, turned around. The judge is not hearing about that. Instead, he comes up with this ruling that children have no fundamental right to learn to read and write. And with one stroke of a pen, he consigned tens of thousands of third graders to repeat. They have to be held back now for a whole year. Now, that's the kind of assassination that is routine in the lower courts. Don't tell me about the Supreme Court. For one thing, it would take forever for a case to bubble up to the Supreme Court level. This kind of atrocity is what is happening every day in lower courts. That's where the fight is. Somebody gets arrested, you go to criminal court, you have no attorney, the circumstances of your arrest are highly questionable. What does that matter? What does that matter to the court? You are going to be remanded to jail until you could figure out your next move. And that is called justice in the lower courts. You have a case in which evidence is manufactured. Police are lying. But that is the case the judge in criminal court or Supreme Court chooses to listen to. The facts are altered. You have no rights. This is the the genocide that is occurring in the lower court. So I don't pay attention to the U.S. Supreme Court. One, I don't believe it to be supreme in any way. And secondly, I appreciate its history as being part of an oppressive system that legitimizes the wrongdoing of the system. I get that. I understand it. I appreciate the history, and I am not going to be easily misled. So, yes, for some people in America, the U.S. Supreme Court is a venerated institution. Absolutely. It does exactly what the particular political interests want it to do. I am maintaining that we should train our eyes instead in the lower courts. That's where the slaughter of people of color in particular, that's where it is routine. It has been going on unchecked for decades. And it is actually expected. Nobody expects anything different from the lower courts. Here are people filing a lawsuit advocating for the rights of children to a good education. First of all, it should be alarming to us that they have to go to a court to see if they could get something done, to compel the system to do what it has to do, and to afford these children, most of whom are children of color, to give them an even shot with taxpayer dollars yet. And you have the temerity of a judge. Setting aside all of that, that's irrelevant. We're not discussing the broken down schools. We're not discussing the underpaid teachers. We're not discussing the responsibility, which is what the suit was seeking, to hold accountable the governor of the state and Miss Betsy DeVos, and whoever else is in charge of education. The judge rules that children, these children, tens of thousands of them, have no fundamental right to learn to read and write. This is 2018, and we have the same mentality coming out of the court as in the days of Plessy versus Ferguson and Dred Scott. It's the same decision. So we are wasting time. We're focusing on the wrong things. Let the political types fight among themselves about the U.S. Supreme Court. They know why they're fighting. Trump knows why he's fighting for his man to take his seat on the U.S. Supreme Court. In the end, it's about business. He is taking care of business, as did presidents before him. The flip side of that coin is that there's no real, robust opposition. The Democratic Party is a bunch of cowards. They talk, they yammer. They try to make a case, but essentially they're on a plantation too. The Democrats are on the Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer plantation. They don't have the courage and the guts to break free. I keep bringing up this point. When Congressman Al Green of Texas was attempting to present from his perspective articles of impeachment of this president, not one of them stood by him. Not one. And when he followed the first salvo with another one, adding more counts to what he says are articles of impeachment, and these are the reasons why the president must be impeached, it was, all you heard in Congress was crickets. Tweet, 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 tweet. Nothing there. That man was standing alone. They were terrified to be boldly in support of him. This doesn't matter whether you agree with his articles of impeachment, whether you think he's on point or you don't think he's on point. The fact is, he's one of yours, and he is making a very bold gesture, and one that, with all the passage of all these months, brings you right back to where you are now advocating the impeachment. Impeach 45. Except that now, just like in Detroit, there's been a twist. The issue now is to protect Maxine Waters, the congresswoman from Los Angeles, because she was accused of urging violence against those officials who serve on Trump's administration. Well, be clear, she didn't do that. But here's the point I'm making. When the opportunity was to existed for you to come forward, all of them, to come forward and strengthen the hand of their fellow legislator, they ran for the tall grass. Now it becomes a personal thing. And here's Al Sharpton and all these people getting together to support Maxine Waters. It's now a personal issue. Before, it was the people's issue. Now it's a personal issue because they will move on this so-called charge of theirs that Maxine Waters has committed an ethical violation, and there are consequences. So now it's a different ball game, and this is exactly what is happening in the larger sense with the U.S. Supreme Court appointee. Who will be the next one? Because people are confused. They're not paying attention. And they're not thinking. And they're not paying attention to history. So I will stop here for a minute. We'll take a break and come back to your thoughts right after this. We'll be right back. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about decisions that are made. And we're talking about the effort to draw us into a false construct that we should be as concerned as the rest of America and the president about who is going to be the next justice, associate justice at the U.S. Supreme Court. And my position is that's not where the action is at all. Don't be fooled. Now, for some people in America, that is a legitimate subject. But for most people who have an entirely different point of reference historically about the function of the U.S. Supreme Court and the function of the court system, we shouldn't be all that concerned. Khalil from South Carolina, how are you? You're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. I like what you're saying about the courts, because that's really what impacts our everyday life. And to tell the truth, most likely, maybe, from what I read and have heard, the Supreme Court doesn't have to take a case. It can be so controversial, and they'll just leave it, you know, it'll be like Civil War days. They just leave it to the local courts. You know, we look what happened to Mumia. You know, that he's a political prisoner. That all happened in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And he was railroaded. But this nonsense with the education, this might be a plan, because in this state, in South Carolina, in the Constitution, this came up a couple of years ago because the state got sued. It's in the Constitution of South Carolina where a child is only entitled to a minimally adequate public education.
Correct.
And that's why we have something called the Corridor of Shame in Dorchester, Berkeley County, and the roads are terrible. You know, I-95 runs right through it. So, of course, you know, there's nothing but a lot of drug dealing and things like that, because what else are people going to do? You know, we're on the road to gulags, because if folks aren't educated, I'm not trying to preach. I want to ask you, I want to have a conversation. So what do you think?
Well, I don't disagree with you at all. In fact, we're making the same point. Depending on who you are in the society, a court system or the courts can either be your friend or your foe. And the cases that I have highlighted today should encourage us not to automatically take on the view that, well, it's the court system, so it's legitimate and it's right and it is, you know, it's smart. These are smart people and they know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Except mm-hmm. that we ought to be very clear that they've known what they've been doing for many, many years.
It seems
but
like
how do we not see that there are two systems in America? How do we not see that? And why are we buying into this idea that it is our U.S. Supreme Court? It isn't. It isn't. And we ought to be riveted on the fact that our folks are being eaten up and chewed out and spit out
mm-hmm.
in the lower courts. That's where we are being slaughtered.
Well,
so we have some choices to make.
And from what I've seen and what I've read, this administration has been working at breakneck speed to fill up these lower federal court positions with young, inexperienced, far right wing Federalist Society judges. In fact, I remember that now. This is anybody can pull this up. There was a judge. Well, matter of fact, he was not a judge. He was just a lawyer who went to a low rent law school. Never tried a case, and he was appointed by this administration to be a federal judge. Do you remember this?
Well, yes, I remembered it also in New York City. The state attorney general, had never tried a case.
That's crazy.
He had never been in a courtroom.
That's insane.
Well, it's true. Well, he had never tried a case.
See, this is a huge problem, because just like you said, this has everyday impact, on people's lives. Because if you don't have resources and you get sucked into the criminal justice system and you're of color, it's easy to get in. And no matter what society says, you are guilty. Let me tell you this. Let me make this very clear. Once you get arrested.
Look at that decision in Detroit. At that decision. We have people who are arguing that the educational services are way below par, and they are jeopardizing the future of children in Detroit. And the judge says, so what's your argument? These children that you claim have jeopardized futures, they have no fundamental right to learn to read and write. So what is your point?
You know what?
They're not hiding
The way you presented that, honest to God, I'm thinking about in that area, I'm thinking about Reverend Pinckney. I know he's not in Detroit, but he's the one who brought to my conscience and maybe other people about the water issue in the area. But it appears that for some reason there's a real backlash against that area. They didn't like the black mayor, Kwame. And, it's a lot. That's all you hear. Even that rapper knew about it. That white rapper, what's his name? Eminem. It just appears that way now. Just trying to look at it clinically, looking back. Because why are they always beating up on Detroit? It's like they just want to blow it up and just clean out all the folks and just get back in there.
Because
that's ridiculous. What you just said,
well on their way to accomplishing that. Thanks, Khalil, for your call today. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm in agreement with the things that you've been saying, but I want to point out some other points. First of all, people have to realize that most of the poor people in these local courts, eventually, they plead to something. Very few people go to trial. I think over 95% of the people plead out whether they're guilty or not. The district attorney can pile some charges on you and tell you, we'll allow you to plead at something, that gives you a shorter period of time, and then take the risk of going to trial and, serving longer time. Also, I think it's important for people to know that these corrupt police go around on sweeps. They sweep up people, who haven't done anything, just walking down the street, and maybe if there's a crime in the area. I've talked to lawyers about this, and they sweep you up. And next thing you know, you being involved in some crime that you had nothing to do with. I have a very close friend who was a lawyer who had a case like that. The man was just walking down the street, and some teenage boys robbed someone. And this is a middle-aged man, and he was swept up with them, and they said that he was with them, and they had no evidence of him robbing anyone, taking any money, and eventually went to trial, and next thing you know, the judge gave him 10 years. So this is something that goes on all the time, people pleading something, and they haven't committed any crime. The other thing,
and
I think
nobody goes to jail. Nobody's charged with prosecutorial misconduct. No one is charged with prosecutorial misconduct.
In other words, a district attorney knows it isn't logical for some 35-year-old man who has a few hundred dollars in his pocket of his own money would be with a bunch of teenage boys who mug someone. That's not even logical. And a jury went along with the prosecutor, and the prosecutor, unless he's an idiot, he should know better. But yet he charged this black man with these teenage boys, and the man was given that time. All right, that's the way things work. People, in most cases, plead. And if you go to trial, you never know what's going to happen. You don't be looking for some justice. The other thing that I think is important, and I want to mention, is about the schools. The point is that they are well aware that they're not providing the proper resources to educate children. They know that. However, in this society, they'll arrest some person on the street and send him to a jail where the costs are over $100 a day to keep him in jail. They'll send him from there to convict him of something or have him plead or something and send him to a prison where you may be spending $65,000 a year to maintain the person in the prison. But they don't want to spend that type of money making adequate schools for children to go to and doing what is necessary to, let's say, properly educate people, which I don't believe they want to do anyway. They want to train people to fit into this system. That's what I think. The point is that another thing is I think is very important is that what happens in a case like this, instead of the ruling class doing what is necessary to give a so-called proper education, they find scapegoats. They talk about failing schools, and that means that there's something wrong with the teachers. And they, got a scapegoat in the teachers, so they're going to attack the teachers and ignore the fact that they're not providing the resources, personal and physical resources, to do a proper job in these schools. And the thing that is totally ignored, is that how a child does in school depends on a lot of factors, social and economic factors that they completely ignore. They ignore the poverty, they ignore the health issues, they ignore the issues that have come about as a result of absenteeism, family disruption, and all the things, neighborhood conditions of people in the neighborhood, safety issues, all of these things impact upon children. You know, so
absolutely,
for example,
but you know, we also ignore these things as a community. We are not standing up to defend our rights and our children and our communities. And this is the point I'm making, that if we were paying attention, we would, by necessity, we would have to refocus and see that the U.S. Supreme Court is not the center of the problem. The lower courts, that's where the trouble is. Thank you, David, for calling. Leona from Michigan, we have only a short time, but enough time to hear what you have to say.
Okay. Hi, Yatrice.
Leona, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, but I can hear. So there's something wrong with the line. Can you hear me? Can I be heard? Hello? Hello?
Yes, I hear you. I hear you.
Okay, good. I just wanted to ask a quick question, Yatrice. How does one go about educating oneself about these candidates for local judgeships? How do you do it? I know sometimes you could look at the political candidates, you could look at their voting records, but when it comes to these judges on the local level, how does one go about educating themselves to find out what kind of record these people have?
Well, you can certainly look up their background in education, their background in terms of whether they had served in courts before or whether they are new to the system. And you can ask for an informational interview.
Okay. Okay.
They're not allowed, at least in New York City, not allowed to campaign, but there's nothing that should prevent people from having an informational interview with a judge. And of course, you look at the ratings of a judge. It's probably not the best way to assess the individual's capacity to judge or the individual's knowledge of the law. But you do whatever you can to locate that person in the system, wherever it is that they have been. You do your best to locate them.
Okay.
Have they had any disciplinary problems? Had they, how are they viewed by their peers? But I would ask for an informational interview.
Okay.
So we can sit down and talk and get to know what you're about.
Okay. Okay. All right. I appreciate that information. Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leona. And that brings us to the end of our program today. I want us to really reconsider how we are being manipulated. And we're pushed in this direction and pushed in that direction. And it's all part of the hustle. They're pushing us in directions where they need us to be, because we are not paying attention to where the real problem is, because if we do have an idea of what the real problem is, we'll end up absolutely confronting them, and they will not be able to escape. So don't fixate on the U.S. Supreme Court, even though the media are doing it. They want us to think that this is the biggest story of the century. It isn't. And Trump wants us to think it's the biggest story of the century. It isn't. The biggest story of the century, if we're talking about courts, is what's going on, the slaughter that is going on in the lower courts. Thanks a lot for listening. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crowe, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Thank you. Bye-bye.